One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my tinfoil hat-wearing wonderful companion with me, as always, and co-host, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Well, I'm keeping all of the bad thoughts out of my head with this tinfoil. It's quite effective.
It also is really good in the winter when it's freezing because it helps keep heat in. It doesn't actually do that. Don't do that. No, I just thought it was funny.
No. It's negative 29 out here. Don't try it.
Yeah, it's cold. But we're not here to talk about, despite what our name for the website would have you believe, we don't actually watch weather patterns. Instead, we're going to be talking about, well, like you said, story and lore in video games. We're going to be answering some questions today, but if we have something we're going to get to before that a little bit that I think you might appreciate. But if you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, I want you to be sure to send those in. You can send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com, singular. Specify what show it's for, and we'll be more than happy to take a look at it and see if we can work it in. If you are not a fan of emailing us, you can go on our Discord. We have two channels set aside, one for Patreon supporters as a way of saying thank you. You help us keep the lights on, and, well, the site wouldn't exist without you, so we appreciate that. We have a Patreon Q and podcast questions channel for you, and we tend to look there first. And if you can't support us on Patreon, we understand. We have a Q and podcast questions channel set aside for folks that can't do that monetarily. But again, remember, folks, sharing our content, telling your friends about us is also supporting us, and we appreciate that just as much. But I'm going to cut this over to Matt because Matt and I were talking a little bit before the show about some interesting implications and story elements that I don't think anybody's really talking about right now. Nobody's really brought it up that I've seen. So, Matt, why don't you go ahead and take it from here?
Okay. Well, I don't know if people know this, but I'm a nutcase who likes to have more than one character of the same class at max level for transmog purposes. I like to level up a bunch of warriors so I can just run old raids over and over again on the same class and see if I get the tier I want. Right now I'm leveling one character is already max level and I'm doing stuff on him. I got one character who hit 67 today, another character is at 65, another character is at like 63. And while I'm leveling these characters, I keep going through the Waking Shores because it's right there. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't have to be your first zone after you've leveled your first character. I don't know if people know that. Adventure mode, you can go anywhere you want, but it's right there. I mean, you get off the boat, boom, you're right there. So I'm leveling through it. One of the places you end up going is the Dragon Scale base camp. And there's a whole bunch of quests around that area. The Primalists are doing various things. And at one point, after you've taken a bunch of pictures of various giant proto drakes, you end up at the remains of an absolutely behemoth one that the Dragon Scale base camp is basically built inside. Like, this thing is enormous. It's about as big as like Alexstrasza is. It's this gigantic thing.
Yeah, it's huge. It's aspect size.
The head is so big that you can just go stand in it. It's mm-hmm. just, it's enormous. One of the drac there is like, you know, I feel so strangely connected to this thing. Would you please come take a picture of me standing next to it just so I have this preserve it? And as he's doing that and talking about how it died, like when you go and look around the ruins, around the remains, you find out that it died from like a bite to the back of the head by something about as big as it is. And even says something, it died battling something as powerful as itself. That's rare for a dragon to, you know, like what can do that to a dragon? And I started thinking, cause you know, there's the remains of this thing inside the earth. If you've done Vault of the Incarnates at all, one of the things you find out is the names of the various incarnates. One of them is called a Eridacron, and a Eridacron is essentially the incarnate of earth. Like the incarnates are fire, earth, air, and water. That's what they are. The water one is obviously freezing. He's cold, but it's still basically they are the elements themselves. And so Eridacron has it, when Alexstrasza later talking about him says that he's the cleverest of them and the most duplicitous of them. He made deals that the others might not even have known about with various powerful forces, including the deal that made them incarnates. Like essentially he made a deal to gain, you know, these elemental powers. And I started thinking about that because he's an incarnate of earth. And we have already seen in this expansion, in the Drakthyr origin, that when the incarnates attacked the Drakthyr and blasted Deathwing before he's Deathwing, then he's Neltharion, and they destroyed whatever that Titan device he was using was, which I really hope comes back. Hope we see about that. But when he destroyed it, he got, you know, Deathwing finally like snapped and reached out to N'Zoth. We know that Deathwing was working for N'Zoth. That's when Deathwing made his deal with N'Zoth, right? We've seen this. That's when it happened. Now, what's the thing that we're always told about Deathwing, about how he was kept hearing the maddening whispers of the old gods because they were trapped within the earth?
And because of his deep connection to that as being the steward of the deep places.
Yeah, being the aspect of Earth meant that he was susceptible to hearing their whispers. Well, Eridacron made a deal to become the incarnate of Earth. So I'm pretty sure same basic deal there. If anything, he and Deathwing were like rivals, both of them saying, no, I'm the one who's in control of the Earth. And it's quite possible to me that that means Eridacron would have been hearing certain whispers. Now, cut to when we're doing the Nor's Dormu quests, the one that sends you various places. One of the places it sends us to is, you know, Azmerloth, which is just A++ would see again. But one of the places it sends us to is the Black Empire. And that Black Empire it sends us to isn't like, when we went to Nyalotha, we were basically kind of in like a virtual reality. But when we go back in time, we go to the actual Black Empire, the place that literally existed on Azeroth. And yeah. N'Zoth is the one who's waiting for us. He's there. He talks to us.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's some folks were mentioning that they thought that it was an asset reuse, which part of it probably is, sure. But I've taken it the same way Matt is, we're actually in Nyalotha. We're actually mm-hmm. in the Black Empire, because what N'Zoth made us go into, what we wound up going into, wasn't necessarily a virtual reality environment that could have been. It was a recreation of what already was.
Yeah, it was basically, calling it a VR is kind of just shorthand. Because what he was trying to do was literally overwrite Azeroth with this. He wanted to use the Halt of Origination to turn Azeroth into this thing. And this was what it was going to be. He was showing you. He was like, it was real when you went there. It wasn't like you go to a VR, like if you're wearing a VR headset, you go in and stuff happens, but it's not real. It was real while you were there.
Yeah, my point was not so much that it wasn't real. It was that it was more so that this wasn't a wishful thinking. This had already happened. This had already been a representation of the Black Empire that had mm-hmm. already existed thousands of years before we got there. We were just seeing what N'Zoth remembered of it. This time, we're actually going to it.
This time, when we step through the time travel, we're literally there. We mm-hmm. are in that time period, and N'Zoth is there. Now, I think it's interesting that we happen to travel back in time to a point where Chromie and the Infinite Flight guy have both been stranded, and N'Zoth is the one who's there. There are multiple other old gods that you could run into, including Yashraj, who at that time still existed and hadn't been torn apart into the Shah yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Yashraj was undisputably the most powerful of them. So why did we run into Nazoth? And what does it mean that Nazoth made a deal with Deathwing? He made that deal on the Dragon Isles.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the Dragon Isles were inside where Nazoth ruled? Because, and now think about it, what's close to the place where the Dragon Isles are on the map? The Broken Isles.
Yep.
And what city, we know that the Broken Isles are all that's left of the area around the Well of Eternity, whereas Shara was standing when she made her deal with Nazoth. And does that mean that that's, you know, if Iridacrom was on the exact same place, they were fighting in this area. It was islands even then.
The other thing to consider too is that our world is essentially built upon the bones of the Black Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like we know that deep in the bowels of Earth, we've gone to sunken cities before. Heck, in Wrath of the Lich King, we go to at least three of them where, you know, the Nerubians are there. Well, Nerubians are sort of real close to that old Gaudi stuff now, aren't they?
Well, the Nerubians are literally descendants of the Akir, and the Akir were born out of the body of, you know, C'Thun. They just straight up were. I mean, and we know that the other old gods also made both, they made Akir and they made Naraki. They just, that's what happened when they were in a place. Those things came out of them. So yeah, there's, I really think of the Iridacron thing. Like one, I've had like three theories bumping through my head. First one is that Iridacron's dead.
Mm-hmm.
That body is Iridacron. And whatever the heck is going around calling itself Iridacron now is something else.
Something that took its place.
Yeah. Second one is that not all the Protodrakes might have agreed with the ideas of the Incarnates. There might have been ones that were like, hey, wait a minute. Why can't we just go our own way? Let the Aspects do what they're doing, and we'll go do what we're doing. We don't have to fight them. We can just leave. And Iridacron killed the guy or girl, whoever it was. Maybe killed it and hit it and made it seem like the Aspects had done it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's number two on my theory bandwagon. Number three on my theory bandwagon is even weirder, because I keep thinking, we keep being told about Galakrond and how Galakrond was experimented on by Tyr. And when we know that there's at least some evidence for that in this expansion so far. But what, I keep coming back to this, what if we don't quite know the true story about this? Like, what if the whole fate of Galakrond is different than we think it is? What if that thing that was calling itself Galakrond wasn't Galakrond? And what if that thing is still around?
Well, the other thing that's been rolling through my mind about this as well, especially like in context of that, is we literally just had an entire expansion about consciousness, souls, and the entire basically existential crisis of id. Like, that's what the Shadowlands really was, if you really break it down, right? And with everything we're seeing here, dragons, they die. What happens to their anima? What happens to them when they die? Are they being thrown back into a Titan engine and being forced to be reborn inside of the Ruby life pools? Or is there something that happened during the experimentation that Galakrond never actually really died? Its body may be gone, but we've seen things linger. We've seen the influence of things long dead linger on this place, linger where they're not supposed to. It's entirely possible, like Matt's saying, that like the thing that's calling itself Eridicus is not, right?
Yeah, Iridacron or
Iridacron, yeah, excuse me. Right? Iridacron, excuse me.
I'm just as bad. I can't remember the names half the
there's
time.
There's too many things. We read too many books.
but when the thing that got me is when Razageth dies, and I'm sorry if that's a spoiler for you guys, but I mean, she's a boss in a raid, you know, something happens. When Razageth dies and the other three get out, Iridacron's the one who takes charge almost immediately.
Oh yeah, without hesitation.
And I keep thinking back to that idea of the connection to the earth and the old gods. And we know that the elementals often, when left out to their own devices, are often in the sway of the old gods. This is an expansion where I really feel like at some point there needs to be a quest where a shaman player goes back to the the Shaman Order Hall and was like, what is going
on? Give this to me, please. All of these elemental lords are supposed to report to us, and yet we have not done anything to check on this. Are you kidding me?
What is going on? Why are there so many elemental beings, you know, around these incarnates? Who are they? Why have I not heard of them before now? You know, elemental lords. And you know what would be hilarious? If this was all a way to get the original elemental lords back.
Yeah.
And to basically break that pact that they made with the shaman, you know,
or
so you can have them as villains again.
Or
go ahead.
A failsafe to break the elemental lords out of their pact with the old gods.
Yeah. For that matter, too. In fact, one of the things that might even be happening here is that this might be the Elemental Lord's way to try to get their own, to get out of that pact.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking about, too, yeah. is because, think about it, Therizane is probably the smartest of all of the Elemental Lords. She is the most approachable, but that's not without reason, right? She's also been the only one that really hasn't been assailed. When Deathwing fell through the planes of existence, where did Deathwing go? Went to Stonecore. Yeah,
but, dude, I just thought of this while you were saying that.
You're probably going to say the same thing I'm thinking of, but go for it. You're going
to mention centaurs?
I was going to go for it, man.
There are centaurs who were led to the Dragon Isles by Onara.
Mm-hmm.
And centaurs are descended from...
Therizane.
Like one of her daughters and one of... Oh, bloody heck.
Scenarius' kids.
One of Scenarius' sons and one of Therizane's daughters. No, the other way around. No, it is what I said it was. It's one of Therizane's daughters, Theridras. I mean, we've seen Theridras. We know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
She's the mother of the centaurs.
Mm-hmm. Of all centaurs.
Yeah, of all centaurs. And these centaurs are descended from those centaurs. We know that because they tell the story of how during the Sundering they were like trapped and they couldn't get out of... They ran away from the Well of Eternity and Ancient Kalimdor, and they were led here by Onara.
A wild god.
Mm-hmm. One of Scenarius's kin, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's just now, that's there we go with Theridras and the Earth. You know, Therizane and Theridras. Therizane is therefore the grandsire, grandmother of all centaur, including the centaur.
But it also makes sense, though, that the original elemental lords, despite their warring with each other, they didn't want to serve the gods. They didn't want to serve the old gods.
No, they didn't want to serve the old gods. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. They fought. They lost, but they fought.
And if Therizane saw Deathwing fall through into Stonecore, saw what was going on, saw the corruption of an old god there, recognized it for what it was, because, of course, an elemental lord would absolutely recognize that sort of... That smell, that taint, that affliction. The force that
bound them.
Exactly. Yeah. And would say, oh, this is interesting now. Okay, well, if they can do that, I wonder what I can do. And throwing incarnates out there is not a horrible, idea. Like, I understand this timeline had happened before then, but I mean, just seeing that influence and trying to reach out and touch things seems exactly what beings trapped in a plane of existence would try to do. Hey, we just had another expansion about where all that started from. Like, it's on the table, right? It is on the table that the elemental lords are behind this, that they're behind the infusing of these incarnates, because they would have the power. They would have the sway. It doesn't necessarily have to be an old god. And that could be why there was a rival between the incarnate of Earth and Deathwing. They happened in the first place.
It seems like Deathwing was the one who was in charge of the war in the first place, too.
Yes, it was.
So, but anyway, that's just the stuff that I was thinking when I came upon that body and I started thinking about Eridacron. So, Joe and I were talking about it, and so hope you enjoyed that solid close to 20 minutes of us rambling about this. But now I guess we can move on to doing some emails.
We are indeed. So we're going to start with a couple questions here. And this one I know is going to be another favorite of Matt's, because it does talk about a topic he loves very much, which is Diablo. Well, two-part question. One of them is Diablo. So two questions for Lore Watch, and these are from Severella, who's a Frost Death Knight. First one, following your retrospective on gods in Warcraft, what does it mean to be immortal in Warcraft? We are referred to as mortals. Some of our characters can be tens of thousands of years old. Some are undead. Forsaken Death Knights are undead. We seem less able to die than many immortals we have faced in Shadowlands. I took it as us being as it being a way to refer to the living, but Razageth refers to us as mortals too. So before we go on to the Diablo question, mortals in Warcraft is sort of an umbrella term, right?
Yeah, when dragons say it, they're just being snotty. Like, I'm just going to say this. Dragons don't have any special, well, that we know of. Dragons don't have any special non-mortal status. Yet, they all seem to say that. And you'll notice the only dragon we saw in the Shadowlands was Ysera.
Mm-hmm.
And Ysera was sent there directly by Alun. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. She was sent there. And she wasn't sent there in the normal way, and she was sent there to be reborn through a wild seed. Alun's goal was that Ysera would be returned to life. Hold on to that for later. There's spoilers in Dragonflight about that subject, but I don't think we're going to talk about it yet. But
just going back to the other thing, we don't really know what happens when a dragon dies.
Yeah, exactly. We know that the essence of the dragons of the Dragonflights has been joined to order through specific processes that we're finding out about. We know that the incarnates have made some kind of pact with the elementals.
Do you want to hear my crackpot theory using an analogy from another IP that is super close to my heart that you'll have no surprise with?
Okay, go for it.
I liken it to dragons potentially, and this is something I've been thinking about too. Why they refer to us as mortals is because maybe they functionally are immortal in a certain particular way. It's almost like what happens with Transformers in the Allspark. The Allspark is essentially what gives all Cybertronians life. When Cybertronians die, they become one with the Allspark. It's a cycle. It just continually goes through. Their life spark goes back. It feeds the Allspark. The Allspark strips basically their memories. More are born, and it just kind of continually goes through. There's entirely possible that that's what happens with dragons, too. Because
that's exactly what happens with angels in Diablo, but
it is exactly what happens with...
They go into the Crystal Arch. But I was actually thinking of something a little bit related. Have you been reading Kieran Gillian's Eternals comic?
I absolutely have.
The Engine of Earth in that story. When an Eternal in that story dies, they are brought back to life and a human dies in their place. I don't know if that's exactly the case here. I don't think it's necessarily the case that the dragon is reborn and someone dies in their place. But again, there's stuff coming up, so pay attention. But I do think it's interesting that it feels like dragons their nature is tied to the elements in ways that we don't yet fully understand. Obviously, the proto-dragons can literally become incarnates of an elemental. But all the various dragonflight dragons are also elementally aspected. I mean, if you look at both the black and the red dragonflight have connections to both earth and fire. If you look at the blue dragonflight, there's definitely, you know, not just arcane energies. It's like they use the elements as a metaphor more than the incarnates and the proto-dragons take it literally. We are of this element. But for the dragonflights, it's been extended up into a metaphor where it's like, yes, you are like water and you can flow and grasp and understand these concepts of arcane magic. Yes, you are like air. You are like the sandstorm. You are time and time's erosion. Yes, you are like fire. You are life. You are, you know, the dancing sparks of infinity. Yes, you are, you know, life itself. What element does that sound like? That fifth element we keep getting told about that we don't see one for the incarnates, but the anima definitely seems to be that. The green dragonflight seemed to be the other side of that.
Fun fact, the fifth element spirit is the main one that the shaman of the Tuskar are known for. Just throwing that out there.
And finally, you've got the dragons of Earth. Who Earth has fire in it. Earth has magma in it, and that's there. They touch on those elements too. So I think it's interesting that you've got that. It almost feels like on one side of it, it's quite literal, and on the other side, it's quite metaphoric, but also literal. And yet, the literal ones don't have a spirit incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have they don't have that force. They don't, you know, they just don't touch upon it. But it's a big part of shamanism. I mean, when Thrall learned shamanism, he sat there and that's the first thing they told him. It's like, you know, there's spirit that binds through everything. And we're even told that that's one of the things that Azeroth is lacking because Azeroth itself draws all the spirit into herself.
Or lacked. We don't know what the current state of it is now.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a ton to it. But It's not that Azeroth lacked it. It's that, you know, if you're standing on the surface of Azeroth, you couldn't just channel it.
Yep.
It wasn't like it was on Draenor, where it was everywhere and it was so much that it was actually kind of endangering the planet. On Azeroth, the elements fought because they couldn't get enough of it.
Also,
and that's interesting to think about. The incarnates aren't fighting each other, are they?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. But yeah, my basic point here is that that all connects to what Joe's saying, and I know Joe's going to say something else, so I'm going to shut up now.
It's just that the term mortals, if you look at who refers to us as mortals, it's always a cosmic entity or something sufficiently powerful that is one step removed from something that has told it that it is essentially immortal. Whether it is the Titan Watchers who empowered the dragons, who the dragons believe that the Titan Watchers and thus the Titans are immortal. We know that not to be the case, because we've seen a Titan die. We've killed the Titan. We've literally killed the Titan.
Yeah, but the thing about that is when we did it, even then we were told this isn't what should be happening.
But yet, right, 100%, right?
Yeah. But that's an interesting thing to think about, is the concept of mortality as the breaker of immortality.
Mm-hmm.
You're mortal because not only can you die, you can kill.
Yes.
The things that aren't supposed to die.
Yep.
And that's the age of mortals is something to think about in that regard.
Because we are shaping the universe in a way that was not planned for, right?
Or at least that these beings haven't planned for.
Correct.
We don't know what the first ones planned.
I still think
some people are tired of the first ones, but I'm telling you guys, there's so much more there.
And I do think Tyr was probably a little more complicated than we give him credit for. Go back and listen to one of our previous episodes. I'm still on the train of Tyr had feelings. He was evolving.
Yeah. There's also the fact that, well, I don't want to spoil this. That's a problem. Is one of these things we're going to have to sit down and do a spoiler episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going
to
happen.
Next one's going to have to be a spoiler episode because there's stuff going on, guys. But
yeah. So that's it. Like, it's just, it's a blanket term. It doesn't actually have a specific meaning anymore. It has a million meanings. So at least don't think too far into it. Now the Diablo 4 question here, I'm going to move on to. Why is Lilith a big bad? I get why the high heavens and the forces of the hells don't like her, but to the denizens of Sanctuary, why isn't she essentially our admittedly sexy and membranous granny? Wouldn't her return be a good thing for the Nephilim? Complicated. Before Matt goes on a rant, don't forget, she wanted us to be the foot soldiers in her war to end the eternal conflict.
Yeah, Lilith doesn't love you. You're a thing to be used. Lilith, initially, when you go back to Diablo 3, Reaper of Souls, and go back through the Pandemonium Fortress and get all the lore books you can, because there's one where Lilith herself writes about what she's up to. And she makes the point, the eternal conflict can be won. And I, you know, Inarius just wants to escape it, but I see a way to victory. I'll explain it to him and he'll understand, but first I'll give him children. Those are her exact words. She went into this wanting to create beings that were both angel and demon, because she understood that the power that an angel or a demon has is only half. It's descended from half of the power that created the cosmos in the first place. But if you mingle them, you get both. You can have both powers. You can basically recreate the primordial Anu, who could shape worlds. Angels and demons can't shape worlds. They can't make them. That's why the World Stone was so powerful. That's why the Eye of Anu, the World Stone, was so important, that they built the Pandemonium Fortress around it and kept trying to fight over who was going to get to have it, because it could create worlds. But you'll notice that before angels and demons worked together, it couldn't create permanent worlds. When the angels had it, they'd make worlds with it, but those worlds wouldn't last.
They would eventually collapse and go back into the World Stone, right?
Yeah, exactly. Only one world was created by the World Stone and existed on. And that world was Sanctuary. And that world was created by Inarius and his followers and Lilith and her followers working together. And that's important. When you talk about Nephilim, when you talk about Lilith and why she's a big bad, that's an important thing to consider. They built a place that didn't need the World Stone to exist, to the point where Tyriel could blow up the World Stone and the world kept going.
Yeah. So think about it like this, like in the grand cosmology of Diablo, we talk about the being that was one that then separated into two, right? you had these two representations that when that being was one was essentially the combination of everything that came after in a pure form of creation. It could create, it could do whatever. It was a perfect being, or near as perfect as union perfect, as you could get.
Perfect in the example of it was complete.
Yes.
Not perfect in the example of, like, when we use perfect, a lot of times we mean we put in moral judgments to it.
Yeah. No moral judgments. I'm meaning complete here.
Yeah, this right. being was a complete being that could make reality. It did. It chose to make a reality so that it could see what it was. And it basically split itself. All these things that people called dark and sinister, and all these things that are called good and righteous. And now it was two beings, Tathamet and the Diamond Warrior Anu.
Anu, yep.
And when they clashed, they destroyed each other. The remains of Tathamet became the hells, and the remains of Anu became the heavens. And the crystal arch through which all angels are born is the spine of the Diamond Warrior. It's essentially Anu, replicating them. As they die, they go back to it and are recreated. Their personalities are gone, but their life energy, the thing that makes them exist, comes back. And that's basically because all of them are little fragments of Anu. Meanwhile, the seven-headed Tathamet, its head's literally ripped out of its dying body and became the seven evils. And all the other demons that are born out of its carcass are the same. They're like little tiny pieces of the primordial Tathamet. But when an angel and a demon have a child together, they are basically recombining a piece of Anu with a piece of Tathamet and are creating the primordial Anu over again in miniature. It's fractal, but it's that basic process. That's why the World Stone was able to create a permanent world on Sanctuary, because it was the power of both working together. You need both. You need both. You need the drive, the determination, the conquest mindedness to upend the rules of reality. And then you need the purpose, the moral clarity, both of these things are needed. Lilith saw that, but she herself was not capable of thinking like that because she is a demon. So when she understood what they could do, what she could create, she didn't do so with love in her heart for them. They're a tool because she is a demon, and she has not, in all the years of her existence, she has never been able to have the realization that Tyriel had and shed her demonic nature. She could do it. It's possible, but she has not tried to. You know, when we see Tyriel rip his wings off and become mortal, there's a reason that Imperius is like, sacrilege. Because to him, that is beyond unthinkable. What he has done, he's not human. He's not a human from Sanctuary. He does not have demon in him, but he is no longer an angel. He has, in a way, he has transcended it. He has taken off the mantle of being a part of that whole thing and made himself other in a way that is still undefined. Lilith hasn't done that. Lilith is still a demon. Lilith is still thinking like a demon, just like Anarius is still an angel, is still thinking like an angel. And the two of them are not looking at us, at the Nephilim, for themselves. Anarius is afraid of the Nephilim. Lilith wants to use the Nephilim. So is it good that she's back? It might be necessary. It might be a balance issue. Rathma may have brought her back because, if it's Rathma doing it, which we're pretty sure it is.
Well, this is going to, I was going to say, this sort of bleeds into the next question, which we can, if you don't mind, I want to go into that maybe.
No, go
I think
ahead.
It's a good transition. And this one's from Dakoon. With the new Diablo 4 trailer, and this is some mild spoilers if you haven't seen it, I'm quite confused why Anarius is fighting against Lilith. At the end of the trailer, we see him attempting to kill Lilith before the screen turns black, but as I understand, Anarius vowed to never cause her harm. What changed over the eons? What could his motivations be? Am I reading too much into a cool cinematic? So I think this feeds into what you were going, so I just wanted to kind of like throw that in there.
First off, we don't even know what he was doing there. Like, we don't get to see him. You know, we see him throw a spear, we don't see what he's throwing it at. He might be just trying to clear the path to get to her, because there were a whole lot of demons in his way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants to be where she's standing. He would have to get through them somehow. But he has spent at least some time in hell being tortured by Mephisto. Okay, we're going to have to go into the Sin War here. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to try and quick and dirty this because we only have so much show here. But during the Sin War, what ended up happening was Inarius had used, when Lilith first started breeding together, the various angels and demons, including Lilith and Inarius. Lilith and Inarius was absolutely besotted with her. This is just a fact. He couldn't understand why. He didn't know because he couldn't. To him, emotions like love don't make any sense. Keep that in mind. The angels are not going around like these are not beings who fall in love. It was not something that he understood, but he knew that he just could not be away from her. Like the more they were together, the more he wanted to be with her. But then they had children. The two of them had Linarion, aka Rathma. Others had others. We don't know who the parents of each individual ancient are. We don't know if they're all like if all the original big ancients are descended from Lilith and Inarius. We don't know. This is not information we have. But the various Nephilim were born, and immediately within like a very few years, started displaying powers and abilities that rivaled the angels and demons that created them. And the angels and demons were terrified because they saw Sanctuary as a hiding spot. Like, if these beings are this powerful now, what about in, like, you know, the blink of an eye to us cosmic entities? They could become so powerful that they attract the attention of the heavens and the hells. And then we're found. And now, you know, we're going to get dragged into the eternal conflict. So they basically came to the decision. You know, and Inarius was sort of like on the sidelines. He wasn't making a decision because he didn't want to upend, you know, Lilith, but he was like staying back. And the rest of them were like, yeah, we think we should kill them all. We think we should kill them because that's the only way we get to be safe. And Lilith was like, you want to kill my grandchildren? You want to kill my creations? No, you die first. And so she killed everybody. Of all the angels and demons that went to Sanctuary, Lilith killed every single one of them. With the exception of Inarius.
She is insanely powerful.
Yes. And not only is she, like, she is the daughter of Mephisto. Mephisto is one of the three great evils. She's just a hair below that. Inarius is an archangel. That's the level of power we're talking about for these beings. We've seen archangels go. You've seen Imperius. You've seen Tyrael. You know how powerful they are. That's where Inarius is. He wasn't actually one of the heads of the Angelus Council, but he was respected enough that they listened to him. Like, he'd come into the room and be like, I don't think we should do that. And they're like, well, maybe he's right. It's Inarius. He knows. That's the level of power we're talking about here. She tried to convince Inarius that, you know, this is my plan. This is, we have these Nephilim now. They're going to get more and more powerful. We don't have to hide. Hiding was just a stopgap. I remember in the book, she's like, I will give him children. These are the children. So she's like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to use these things, and they're going to win the war for us. And we're going to be the ones who win it. It's going to be us. You know, it's not going to be my father and the other, you know, evils. It's not going to be your archangels. It's going to be us, you and me. We're going to win the war. And Inarius was like, oh, okay. You were using me this whole time. And you forgot that I'm the one with the link to the World Stone at the moment, didn't you? And so he used the power of the World Stone to banish her. Because he didn't, as you said, he vowed not to harm her. But he didn't vow not to, like, you know, to allow her to do what she was doing. He was repulsed at the idea. And so he banished her from existence. He didn't just banish her. He didn't just say, oh, go back to hell. He banished her from existence.
Mm-hmm.
He just, you don't exist anymore. You are outside of existing. But unfortunately for him, he forgot she was linked to the World Stone too. Remember, they used it together. So she basically waited and spent her time waiting. Little changes, because if she made big changes, he would notice and immediately change it back. She made little changes and little changes and little changes till the thing Inarius did after he got rid of her, which was to make Nephilim impossible. She slowly eroded it. And in the process, destabilized the World Stone. And that's how we got the Sin War in the first place. That's how we got Odysseon. And you'll notice when Odysseon is coming up and learning how to use his powers, and his brother Mendel is learning how to use his, and other Nephilim are flocking around and coming to their banner, there's a person who's helping them who turns out to be Lilith. And Odysseon does not stick around with her. He knows immediately, this person does not have good motives for me. Because that's the thing. Lilith does not care about the mortal beings of Sanctuary. She does not care about the Nephilim as anything but tools for her purpose, which is to rule everything. Like, if Lilith gets her way, there won't be a heaven or a hell. There'll just be Lilith. And any angels or demons who still exist will just be doing what Lilith says. She will rule everything. She will be the queen of existence. That's what she's going for. As for why he's trying to kill her, he has never gotten over the fact that she was just using him because he had genuine feelings for her. And in her way, she might have genuine feelings for him. Like, she's a demon. Like, imagine if your cat was like an actual intelligent being that you could have conversations with. Your cat could be like, yeah, I love you, claw, claw, claw. It's still a cat. Your cat loves you and yet still claws you because your cat is still a cat. Yep. Lilith's way of loving you can be, I will conquer infinity and we'll rule it together. I'll share rule of the universe with you. That's how much I think of you. That when we were completely blasted away, all these others, and we are ruling on this giant heap of skulls of all the people we had to kill to get to be in charge, I'll share that with you. Why do you look so sick about this? It's literally the best thing ever. You are really hard to please, Inarius. Seriously, I've given you children who can dominate existence. What more do you, you want to be feel bad about it? Okay. Do you see where I'm going with this? Like, Lilith is a demon and she thinks like a demon and we are not her friends.
No.
Because she doesn't have any.
Yeah. And then that's the thing to keep in mind, right? Like, Matt, there's nothing I can really add that Matt hasn't already said because he's answered this pretty, pretty completely. It's just, she's not our friend. And at the end of the day, a vow doesn't mean anything because it's not like a fairy promise in D&D in like the Feywilds where like, if you go back on your word, something's going to happen.
Yeah. This is not a geas from, Irish mythology. It doesn't enforce itself. He just said he wouldn't do it, but then she ended up manipulating events. So he went to hell and her dad tortured him for however long it happened.
Yeah. So like the feelings are allowed to change and, you know, it's a thing.
But then again, we also don't know what he's doing there.
Correct. I mean, besides, raising his troops to Akarat.
I honestly don't, dude, I'm going to come back to this because I want to mention this. Joe, I think Joe is right on the money. We were having a conversation and I've been thinking about it since. I think we don't know when he got out.
Yeah.
And the foundation of the Church of the Zakharum, the faith that Akarat started, is after the Sin War.
And it's also started by an unnamed angel.
And it's happening during the period of time that the Civil War in Hell and then the Dark Exile are happening just around that time. So if Mephisto was setting up his own banishment to Sanctuary, he couldn't very well be sitting there torturing Inarius all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he even let the guy out on purpose because he wanted the Zakharum Church to exist so he could corrupt it. There's a lot going on. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, the other thing is he could have also wanted a failsafe for his inevitable daughter's betrayal.
Yeah. Well, then he did. She'd already betrayed him. So her inevitable betrayal had already happened. So yeah, there's a lot going on here. We don't know everything yet and don't expect that you do, but there's lots of reasons why Inarius might want to go after Lilith. He might be going after her because now he's going to do to her what she did to him. I don't know.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Because think about it from the other side of the coin too, right? He may no longer fear the Nephilim, but he may want to end the eternal conflict. And a really great way of doing that is to have the best and strongest fighters on your side go to hell and eradicate it from existence. Mm-hmm. Okay. And doing that by raising a church of zealot paladins who might also happen to be Nephilim. That's a pretty good way of doing that. Just throwing it out there.
And for that matter, he might want to get, he's always been weird about Lilith. Like he couldn't get her away from his mind. He couldn't stop thinking about her. Maybe he wants to put her in a box, the way he was put in a box. And that way she'd never get away from him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not stable anymore. Inarius has been through a lot. We don't know what you being tortured by Mephisto was like, but I'm pretty sure Mephisto knows really good tortures.
It ain't good. Let's be honest. It ain't good.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a ton going on.
All right. So we're going to move on to our next one, which is going to be from Gavlin, who is also with a Diablo question. Let's speculate on what happened in the years between Diablo 3 and Diablo 4. In the latest cinematic, the scariest thing isn't hell or the demons. It's Inarius and his Zakharum army. See, I'm glad Gavlin's on the same page as us. What if the reason Rothma has summoned Lilith is because Inarius has returned and established a fascist regime of humans to wipe out the Nephilim since he can't use the World Stone to prevent their emergence? Other ideas, please speculate. et cetera, et cetera. So going back to it, I don't think he maybe wants to eradicate the Nephilim anymore, but you're on to something because we do know a couple things here. We know that the time between Diablo 3 and Diablo 4 has not exactly been a healthy time for the world. Humanity has been suffering, and this is akin to like Mad Max, Judge Dredd levels of isolation, right? You have pockets of humanity that are struggling to survive. Because I think what Malfiel and everything, it wiped out, I think they said 75% of the population.
A big chunk. I don't remember if it was 75. At one point, I think he said that they literally was like 9 out of 10 people died.
Yeah. So like,
I don't remember the exact number.
But these societies, these groupings of people surviving and banding together are isolated. They're pockets of humanity. And so raising a Zakarun, or an army of Akarot, raising a zealot army and having a stronghold isn't necessarily the worst idea. And we know that that's actually something that's going on, is that they're actively recruiting people. They're going and recruiting survivors to bring them into the faith, to bring them in to wherever their stronghold base is. We know that much. They've told us that much. It's now starting to make sense. And Rathma is always been about sort of, or at least balance, right? Like it's tangentially after, why can't I think of the name of the spirit that he talked with the dragon?
Oh, Tragul.
Yeah. After talking with Tragul, he understood the cosmic balance that needs to be in place. Well, raising a zealous army, and maybe not necessarily a fascist regime, but probably pretty close to it, let's be honest, but going through and taking all of humanity's survivors and trying to get them to work for you as an army, and then offering them basic needs like food, shelter, and safety in exchange for, when that comes time, you're going to put on this armor and you're going to go to war for me. That doesn't scream balance, and things have already been thrown way out of balance. Diablo 3 itself, like, mm-hmm. Just look at the final act. Look what Malfiel does. Nothing is in balance. It hasn't been in balance for a long, long time.
It bears mentioning too, guys. The beginning of Diablo 3 is based around a prophecy of the end times. And that's essentially what they get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between like, you know, the amount of people killed by what Malfiel did, it's just basically destroyed whatever kind of social order existed between the various nations of Sanctuary. There's just, everything is in ruins, and we don't know what exactly happens over that period of time. We don't know like how many places get to remain even remotely a society. Like we hear the concept of a lot of places, just isolated villages with no real way to reach out to the outside world. There's very few countries that don't even have rulers. Look at, it's not like Westmarch is in any place to enforce any kind of social order. The king is dead. The capital city is destroyed. And then, you know, the vast majority of people die. It's like, I want you to look at the Black Death and the effect it had on Europe. Like, people often talk about the Black Death, but it's kind of, you really have to understand that the Black Death took out like half of the people, not three quarters, half. And that was enough to basically change the course of European civilization for several hundred years.
Oh yeah. Borders shifted as a result of this. Like society was ever changed.
Yeah. And when that kind of stuff happens, like the Zakarum faith at the end of Diablo 2 is in ruins. It is, you know, its name is blackened. People don't understand the full details. Nobody knows exactly what happened, but they know that the Zakarum failed and, you know, people did not believe in them like they used to. There's a Zakarum faith priest in Diablo 3. The first thing he says is, you know, the Zakarum have failed. What faith have we? You know, this is a big deal. Now imagine that after that, you know, almost everybody dies. Suddenly, if a Zakarum shows up and tells you, you know, this is what happens when you turn your back on the faith of Akarot, you might listen. And especially when I keep going back to that thing, like Joe and I were just talking about with Inarius, possibly as the angel that founded the Zakarum, the one that spoke to Akarot, the one that's called Yerius, I think, Yerius. I don't know how to pronounce that, but that's in the Book of Cain. He talks about it, that he thought that Akarot was seeing an image of Odyssean sacrifice, but what if what Akarot was seeing was literally Inarius showing him Odyssean sacrifice?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, Inarius remembers that, even if everybody else doesn't. Inarius does. Inarius knows what happened. Inarius fought Aldissian and lost to him.
Yep.
So maybe that changed his mind. Maybe he doesn't want to kill the Nephilim anymore because, well, what, you know, if Aldissian could beat me, maybe Lilith was right. And, you know, there's that image from the Diablo 3 original reveal. There's a picture that they put up, not during the cinematic itself, just a piece of art of Lilith and Inarius together. We don't know that he went to hell to hurt her. We don't even know how she got there. He might have come to get her. He might be like, you know what? You were right. You were right. Better we rule than anybody else.
The end of it, the end of Diablo 4, like, we know at some point we're going to have to interact with Lilith. It very well might be both of them.
Mm-hmm. And for that matter, though, you know, even if it isn't, you are absolutely correct that the idea of that paladin army wandering and just walking into hell, the paladins were essentially broken to the point where the Templars were the remnants of one of the paladin orders. Remember the Templars? Mm-hmm. The guys who literally tortured you until you couldn't remember anything? Where would you get that idea?
I mean, it sounds like something that might have happened to somebody while they're, you know, chained up in hell.
Yeah, doesn't it, though? So, yeah, there's a lot going on here, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. Diablo 4 is going to be a wild ride story-wise. Like, I am massively curious where we're going to go with it. And there's more. There's always going to be more.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that we know that at some point, that at least some of the lesser evils are showing up in this.
Which we haven't seen them in a while.
Yeah, no, they haven't been around since Diablo 2. And we know that we're not going to see Diablo or Baal or Mephisto in this initial story, but that Diablo 4 is intended to be a story that lasts. Like, it's going to be around for, like, they know it's going to be around, because look at what happened with Diablo 3. The game's just now, they're just now ending it.
Although they have mentioned that they're looking at doing things like a series of expansions and treating it almost MMO-like, where mm-hmm. there's a continuation of content and story for a longer period of time than Diablo 3 had.
Exactly. So think of it almost like live service, but hopefully less live service-y.
More MMO-y.
Yeah. And think about what that means for the story. Like, for a period of time, we're talking about like what happened on Sanctuary, but for a period of time now, Heaven shut its gates. Heaven was like, you know, we're not dealing with you, and basically closed the door. Hell doesn't have any rulers. Nobody's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
What, in a way, I could actually see Rathma thinking, if Lilith comes back, at least, you know, now there's somebody who can tell them what to do. You know, it in order to end all this chaos is not order. But, you know, balance requires both of them, not just one of them. You can't balance chaos and order if everything is chaos. So, yeah, there's a ton of possibilities for this story that we haven't even thought about yet.
Yeah, there's a bunch here. But I think we're going to have time for one more question before we have to call it a day. And this is going to be back to the WoW side of things. And this is from Aravis. I apologize. Spoilers for the end of the Thaldrassus campaign questing. Care to talk about what you think the whispers during the Black Empire portion of Chasing Chromie and Eternus were about? Also, Rossi, I see what you mean about the "you will die" whispers. Very, very creepy. So,
well, I mean, go ahead. If you were in the original WoW, like if you played, some of that is a little bit of like a hat tip.
Yeah,
because some of those are the original whispers from C'Thun's raid. Your friends will abandon you. That's straight up out of there. You will die. That's. I remember doing that raid and hit those whispers hit for the first time, and we were all like, whoa, okay, this is creepy. So yeah, part of that's a hat tip, but part of that is also the fact that I want to ask you a question. Joe, mm-hmm. back in Battle for Azeroth, did you do the quest line that ended up with Nezzoth's mark on you?
I did, and I went through the quest line to get rid of it.
But then when you did the next part and Nezzoth came out, he still hit you with that multiple eye thing.
Sure did.
And knocked you, like you couldn't resist for a second, and he did what he wanted to do. That means that he basically, if he marked you, he knows where you are. Mm-hmm. He can make you hear his thoughts, and he can hear your thoughts. Then you go back in time and Nezzoth is there. I waited for this. I'm glad that I waited for this. Your character canonically is unable to prevent N'Zoth from reading his mind.
So he knows what's coming.
How he dies. Yeah. What if everything that happened after is because you went back in time? Yeah. What if Deathwing got corrupted because you went back in time?
Yeah.
And he read in your head everything that's going to happen. And so, rather than change it exactly, he made sure it happened exactly the way he saw it in your head so that he would know exactly what direction it was going to go, giving him the freedom to do anything after. Tell me, I know you were thinking about this. I know you were. This
is not something that has not occurred to you. No, it's something that's been on my list too, because like I'm trying to make heads or tails of it, because the problem with time travel in WoW in general is that it doesn't, this is going to sound so weird, but I don't know a better way to phrase it. It doesn't follow a conventional set of rules. It's kind of all over the place. So there is time and space and alternate dimensions and the fraying of the timeline and all this other stuff that sort of feeds into it. The problem with the Bronze Dragonflight is that their entire purpose is to sort of fold everything back into a set path.
You know what I think of them as? Cooks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when you're making a cake and you're trying to get all the ingredients like mashed up properly, and sometimes you fold it and you fold it and you fold it. It's like blacksmithing with metal. You fold it to get the impurities out, and then you hammer it, and then you fold it again, and then you hammer it, and you're just trying to get the impurities out. That's why the Japanese swordsmith's swords were folded so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this is something people don't talk about a lot, Japan is not exactly blessed with really strong deposits of iron ore. Like, they've got it, but it's in the middle of a whole bunch of other crap. You don't want a sword that's got a ton of carbon in it, you know, but too much, and it's not steel, it's just junk. So you have to pound the slag out of it. That's what I always think of when I think of the Infinite Dragonflight and the Bronze Dragonflight.
But the problem, I agree, but it's like that becomes a problem, because now if everything knows that, which we have reason to believe that N'Zoth does, then you can use that to your advantage, which what Matt's proposing and what has definitely been an idle thought of mine is that that's exactly what was intended to happen. It's also why he fixated so hard on the Halls of Origination and the Origination Device.
It's why he fixated so hard on you.
Exactly.
Why did he put a crown on you? Why was he so interested in you?
Because you were the one that showed up in the Black Empire all those eons ago to retrieve two lost dragons.
And then he was like, oh, finally you're here. Okay, great. I get to push this thing into motion. Yeah. That's something I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah.
Why are the whispers? Yeah. What's the deal with the whispers? That's the deal with the whispers. N'Zoth can see into your head.
Yep. And he can see into your head because this already happened once before. He just did it earlier, or like Matt saying, got to battle for Azeroth. Sought his opportunity, put his mark on you so that the next time you went there, because it is cyclical, it is something that has to happen for the timeline to continue.
You did that. The thing you said, I remember we were talking about the various, oh man, the Legion stuff, the they do not live, they do not die, they are beyond the cycle, the circle, mm-hmm. the torches, the cyclical nature, the circle, the torches, right here.
Yep.
Right here.
Like the talking of the meme about like time is a flat circle. It kind of is. It really is, at least in the way that it's curated. They've been linking a bunch of this stuff for eons and ages. Go back and do the Emerald Nightmare. Go listen to the Whispers from the Tree of Ilganoth. Go back and listen to the Legion stuff. Go back and listen to like a lot of the old Gotti stuff. Go get Yogg's puzzle box. It all starts to make sense right now if you start piecing it together. At least I think so. And maybe it is a little tinfoil hatty. But I've been saying this for years. I'm going to maintain it. This was all supposed to happen. This was all preordained, not because, of fate or anything like that, but because the Bronze Dragonflight's primary job is to, like Matt said, beat the timeline back into a single straight piece. But in order to do that, sometimes you have to go back and ensure things happen. Sometimes, I don't know, maybe you have to present this is going to be a topic for next week, but a little preview. Maybe you have to present a villain that unifies everybody quite to specific points of time to make sure events happen. I don't know, maybe like a certain green orc breaking out of South Shore and making his way home. Yeah. So I think that's going to do it for today, unless there's anything else you want to add, Matt.
I mean, there is, but, you know, we can't be here all day.
So. All right, friends. Well, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. Again, friends, if you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, be sure to send those in. You can send them to podcast@BlizzardWatch.com. If you are a Patreon supporter, you can go ahead and send them into us on Discord in our Patreon queue and podcast questions channel. And if you can't support us on Patreon, and you just want to send us a Discord message with your topic or question, go ahead and toss it in the Q and podcast questions channel. Again, we appreciate all of your continued support. It does mean a lot to us. And I mention this every time, following us on different platforms like Spotify, tweeting links out, sending links to your friends, all of that does matter. And it does continue to support us. So if you can't support us monetarily, do that. And it's really, really appreciated. Because it helps us, you know, stick around. But with that, folks, we'll see you next week.
Enjoy your lore cookie.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.